Yo, 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 this is Curly Castro, the Call Out Culture Podcast. And right now, I want to give some praise to our $20 tier Patreon supporters. So I want everybody to know out there that Adam Lewis, yo, he nonstop. And my man Colin Stevenson, yo, he nonstop. Big ups for all the support. We got more to come. Shout out to all the other Patreon supporters. The $20 tier, yo, they nonstop. Shabam, shableep, we out. Call out, call.
Welcome to Call Out Culture with your hosts, Alaska, Curly Castro, and Zilla Rocca. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, call out cultists of all ages, welcome back to the only Scarface-centric podcast on the planet. And it's not even fully Scarface-centric, it's just we have a series on Scarface. So, as you know, the three of us are not fully versed in the world of Scarface, but we have a guest today to help us get through that and maybe understand it a little better. So, you know, I'm joined by my homie Zilla Rocca. Castro is running a little late. And we have the venerable. I still stole your words, eh?
We're still going venerable week to week.
Yeah. The never magnanimous.
the odious. Is that a word? An odious? Is he odious?
Odious is a bad. That's like when.
Okay, never mind.
You smell. Remember when Marvin Hagler was selling Old Spice deodorant?
Oh, I thought that was odiferous.
No, I think it was odiferous, but yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, we are joined today by Cam from the Crate 808 podcast. Cam, thank you for joining us today.
Yo, thank you, man. Thank you. That I need a thesaurus and dictionary all in one right now. It's great to hear the Queen's English being still used so profoundly over there in America.
That's what you're gonna get here, man.
Yeah. I love it. And I'm honored to be on, guys.
Yeah, we add an extra U at the end in all of our spellings of like flavor and stuff, so we could fit in. We you guys, and there's like an S where there's a C in our language.
Oh, I'm looking at odious means. You ready? Arousing or deserving hatred or strong dislike. Whoops.
it's very. Oh, so it's arousing a feeling of hatred.
Yes.
It's not like arousing correct. Or. It's not like. Dual meaning, like
right. Another synonym for it is repulsive or offensive.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's not Cam.
Nah. Never. Yeah. Never. Okay.
What's the antonym for that one?
Oof. Odious. I don't know. I'm not looking at that. I can't.
You're the rapper.
The Vainglorious.
Vainglorious. The B.
That sounds like a wrestler's name. Vainglorious.
Yeah. Rob Van Dam Glorious.
Rob Van Dam.
Oh, odiferous. Odiferous means having or giving off an odor.
There you go.
There it is. All right. Okay. He's not odiferous. Yeah. I can't confirm or deny that. What's up, Cam?
So it's time to disclose that we are sponsored by Webster's Dictionary.
The Merriam-Webster edition.
Yeah, Merriam-Webster edition and the MeUndies edition.
Casper mattresses.
Yeah. So, Cam, you're joining us today to talk about, we're talking about an album that you suggested.
Yes.
Mr. Scarface is Back. Why did you want to go with this record? What is it about this record that you're like, this is the one we need to talk about?
That's a very good question. Because I was looking at, now, through that email, there was a lot of mental tug of war going on. Because I was like, right, I should, the diary had gone, which is absolutely fine, absolutely should do. But then I was like, do you know what? I actually really love My Homies. And at Untouchable, I loved, disliked, and now I love again. So there's a journey with the Untouchable. But when I looked at my Scarface, because we did like a top five Scarface episode, and I was like, right, so now I have a Scarface playlist of Scarface joints, just bang, 100 songs, whatever it is. So I then looked at that and I thought, you know what? Real estate-wise, The Diary and my Mr. Scarface is Back takes up more real estate in the top 20, I would say.
Oh, wow.
So that way, I was like, I wonder why that is. Why? So listen to the whole album as a whole. I was like, it's a really interesting point in time. For hip hop, 1991, coming into the decade that you know I love talking about on the podcast, 1990s, that's all I'm about. But I'm like, that's a really fascinating time to me between 89 91, 92, how it changed, what a change, what the artists like LL having a massive come up, Cube having a massive come up, this kind of thing. And then I was like, this album kind of sits in a place that you could easily, I don't know if the word dismiss is the right one, but it's like you could easily just say this album is of its time. It sounds of its time. He definitely is rapping like other rappers, I would say, in
Definitely.
1991. But I do think there's a deeper layer to it. And I reckon that because my favorite Scarface song ever is A Minute to Pray and A Second to Die. And we will go into that. But that is my like joint. And then the others that come off it, I'm like, there's still some depth, actually. If you were to just give, give the other stuff just not too much of a look and go deeper. There's actually quite a few things on this album that I love and I absolutely love. And yeah, so I think this album for that, I touched on Cube there, but I think it's really hard for someone like me to not think of Ice Cube and Mr. Scarface is back is a real counterpoint to the West Coast is doing this shit. And then this is what Face is doing. And it kind of, there's a lot of overlap in there, the sound, what they're talking about, just the worlds they come from. So I thought it's quite nice to just talk about a piece of work that might get a bit overshadowed by someone like Cube and America's Most Wanted. And then, then led to a ridiculous legacy where My Homies on the tail end of this decade to see the growth of this guy from go from there to My Homies. It's again, I will keep mentioning My Homies because I love that album and I didn't get to bring it. So, but yeah, no, that's roughly why I thought let's go with this one actually next. Also, I don't know how many people would pick it. I don't know how many people out of all the ones that are left would pick this one. I think Untouchable would get a lot of love from
Yeah.
just people I know.
The Fix too. People love want to talk about The Fix. Z,
Oh yeah.
what was your relationship or preconceived notions about this record? Like, did you
I
have a relationship?
no,
Not, did you
no.
have any like sort of preconceived notions going in?
No. My entry point, we might have discussed it on the no, I missed the first one we did on the diary. I was out of town. So the diary, I knew the singles from the diary. My entry point was Untouchable. That was where, because I was like that had, the Tupac joint, right? So Smile was huge. And then from that point on, I always knew of him through Mind Playing Tricks on Me, Ghetto Boys. And then everyone would always, like, he was the guy being East Coast as shit that everyone on the East Coast is like, he's great. He's dope. Like, he got that cosign early and it always maintained, whether it was a source, whether it was other rappers, interviews, people I knew. So I never got into this one at all. It seemed like very Ghetto Boys still, you know what I mean? And I didn't have their records, so I was like, okay. But listening to it now for the first time, yeah, like Cam nailed it. It never hearing this record and thinking like, oh, this is very NWA Ice Cube adjacent of its time, but he has his spin on it. You know what I mean? Like there, we'll talk about that. Like what, how he separates himself from that era. From the production choices that everyone was rocking with, and what's cool about it, I will say, is like because it's 91, it's touching on a lot of the breaks everyone's using, a lot of samples that end up getting run into the ground. But again, what he does to it makes you be like, oh shit, and it's 12 songs, which I love. You know what I mean? It's like everything in there is for there. There's a couple of like song arrangements I would move around, but other than that, I'm not like ah. There's like a 4-song stretch I just skipped them all. To get to track 18, which I thought was cool. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah, and for me, I always thought this was a Ghetto Boys album, strictly
Oh.
based off the album cover. Like the whole, all
Yeah.
Ghetto Boys are on there. So I never listened to this record. I never sort of went. I always like, I like the Ghetto Boys singles, but I kind of saw them as a novelty act for a long time. I remember
Same.
like the reporting on them. They're like the hyper violent, like super violent group that's like worse than NWA. So it sort of was like, all right, I was like, it's like some shock shit. I'm not really gonna check it. It wasn't until later that I really saw the value of their work and like how good they were and how groundbreaking they were. So like that was really my relationship with this record. Cam, did you have like, outside of why you picked it, like what when you were coming up, did this like speak to you in any particular way?
I was late to it as well, man. I was late to Southern hip hop generally late.
Hmm.
My stuff was so coastal. It was East and West, and West to begin with, then East. But because I loved West, and look, I was like 14 when that beef was kicking off, so it became a real thing. Like East West, I'm fully well. I will back West Coast sounds till the day I die over New York, and until you get a bit older. And then it got to the point where I was like, actually, loving West Coast leans really nicely into Access Gateway into South Southern music, because there's just that same kind of vibe or energy to it sometimes. My access to it was later. So I think it probably was in the noughties when I was going back and just trying to, I don't know, just consciously trying to go into just a bit more discographies I've not really delved into. Like I'd heard Rakim in the 90s, but you know, when you're older, that fixes out. This guy's he's doing features. His name's like around, like he is definitely a heavyweight. Mixtapes, he was dropping mixtapes. I remember that time in the mid noughties. And that's when I did go back. And I mean, The Diary, I remember as a kid loving, but this album had just completely passed me by, really. Apart from the album cover, always hit me hard. Like, I never remember listening to it, but I remember the album cover, which is an odd thing because it's just so chaotic. It's just chaos, man. This is what is going on. Like, the main guy is in the back, and there's only his little face, and then there's half a guy's face here. What are they doing? It's so chaotic. And as a kid, that really attracted me to the album. I remember that. But yeah, I was about 25, and when I listened back, I don't know, at that age, I'd gone through the 90s. We were in the underground, like seeing Stones Throw, stuff like that. And I was just at this point, I was thinking, really miss 80s, like just sound in my 20s, late 20s. And I think that's one of the things that attracted me to this album, was to go back and be like, yeah, it sounds fresh. It doesn't really sound fresh. It sounds like everything else at that time, in a way. But it also, at that time, to me, it sounded like, yeah, I'm so glad I revisited this one. So yeah, man, that's that again, late to it, a bit like you guys, really.
It's funny that you say the album cover, because to me, it's the only Scarface album cover that stands out. Like, all the other ones are just like terrible. It's the worst album covers in the game. Castro, what was your relationship with this record? Or if you'd had one, and if not, did you have like preconceived notions coming into it?
So and when I went back to it, I remember, as you know, as we do when we revisit these things, I remember certain joints. I was like, oh, I remember that one. So like Diary of a Madman, Money and the Power. I remember Money and the Power pretty heavy. Now this is 91, so I'm like, I'm just starting high school, if I'm remembering right. And so I knew Face more for Ghetto Boy shit. So sometimes your group is a certain way where you don't even notice that they're doing solo stuff. If like I remember with Ren, it took me a while to find where Ren solo stuff was, you know what I'm saying, afterwards. So I think I, you know, came up to it late. I mean, this record is hard, like capital H. Like that's what this record is. And also it's very much what I'm starting to notice is like, specifically with this one, I don't want to splash past the question, but like this is it's a non-regional record. Like I don't hear Houston or Midwest when I hear this. I hear hip hop formula of the time. Like it sounds like a hip hop record, even from where you're at and what you're talking about. Say he's talking about different things, but it's like this sounds like hip hop tropes. Like KRS-One could have made this record with some of these sounds back then in '91. So I definitely had to go back, like, because it's his first record solo, and then it kind of there's a Venn diagram blend of when this was as opposed to Ghetto Boys and all that stuff. But yeah, so I had to come back. But like I said, I did remember a bunch of the joints, Money and the Power being the main one that I remembered. And then also what I was brought up that the Marvin Gaye sample on track 11. This is probably like one of the first Marvin Gaye samples, you know, not just played out. Like people have probably chopped Marvin up to this point, but in 91, when you're putting out the ba ba da 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 da, like recognizably, your song would be the first one. So when people do it later in different ways, it was like, yo, old Face did that. That's what I thought about.
It's interesting you say how it sounds like hip hop, because it's like less than a year later, G-Rap did Live and Let Die with Sir Jinx. And that's a very sort of different sound than what we've heard from him in the past, but it still sounds like the hip hop of that time. Like, it doesn't sound out of place. So, you know, once you had we had these preconceived notions, we kind of had these ideas, like, how was the reality of this album different than what we thought was going to happen in it?
So the diary, when I heard a diary for the last episode we did, that album is like very much what to me what his records would follow, like production wise, his flow is more musical on the diary, and he that's like the beginning of like the Scarface sound to me. When I heard this one, I was expecting that, but what I got was, like we're saying, very 1991 approach. even does a thing where he'll do the song title. That will be in the hook, and then he'll say that as the last word in the bar going into the hook. You know what I mean?
Yes,
Like
very
everyone would
much.
do that, and or they would just like drop
Like
the
he
beat
trails when he
out.
trails them and such and such end up money in the power. Money in the
Yes.
power. Money like
Yeah.
that type of
You're
thing.
like, born killer. You know what I
I
mean?
still
Like
do
he
to
would
this
say that.
day. I was, you know what this was? I was bouncing around from songs. I'm glad you brought that up, Z. And I was listening to this excellent Blueprint EP. And we about to have him on the show about the what do I want to call it? The auspices of an EP. Like what makes it's five tracks. One track and even got lyrics on it, and it's perfect. It fits everything. So anyway, sorry. He has a song
Sure.
on there about with is it Falling Down last?
Yeah, the title
Falling
track.
Down.
And something about it made me think of one of my tracks from Tosh, which is Night Terror Fabulous. I'm thinking is either the subject matter is a through line. Anyway, so then I think Blueprint does it on his EP, I'm pretty sure. Right, because Blueprint is kind of known to do that. And then I was jumping around. I found one of my old songs, "Night Terror Fabulous," where I repeat "Get up and get out," and that's not exactly the point that I was trying to make.
I don't know what's
But
going on right now. But anyway, I'll
the
wrap up
hooks,
my point.
the hooks, the hooks,
Sure. The hooks, yeah, go
the
on.
hooks. That's all I. That's all I
That's
got.
all you
Oh, all right.
got.
That's all I got. The
Cool.
hooks. I'm agreeing. I'm agreeing with y'all. The
Thank
hooks.
you. Wonderful. So yeah, to me it was like hearing the humble beginning, so to speak, where it's like, okay, he really loved NWA, he really loved Ice Cube. And so I wasn't expecting that because I always felt like he was as wiser beyond his years guy. And again, the stuff I'm more familiar with is like his stuff with his sound and his style.
Did
So to
you
hear him
naturally
doing
think he was
that,
older? Is that what you're
oh,
saying?
always did. Yeah, I
Even though
always
he
thought,
is like the same age as all of them we're talking about,
yeah,
but
I know,
he's
but I always thought he
21.
was,
I thought
but
he
you,
was born 40.
yeah,
Like
like he's that
yeah, like
guy.
he was the
Yeah.
older guy. So I just wanted to ask. Sorry to
Yeah.
interrupt you. My bad.
No, that's it. So for me, it was like hearing that, and again, like the beginning of his writing style, which is very cold. Like what separates him from NWA when I listen to his record is, and Ice Cube, they were, saying political shit, street shit, wild shit, but they have like an air of mischief about them. Even like on the Death Row records, it's like, we know you're not gonna like it. We're saying
No,
it anyway. Ha ha
okay. You know
ha.
where you get that from, Z? From
What?
the essence of the energy that's built off the Chronic. Knucklehead kids
Yeah.
locked in a
Right.
studio, but
Yep.
they do little petty things and run around, ha ha. They
Right.
running you out the
Right.
7-Eleven. Now we don't know what
Like
the West Coast
Eazy-E
version of
loved
that is,
that. He loved
but
the mischief, right?
yes.
Scarface, this is not mischief. This
No,
is
this
like.
is serious. Look, this is Z. All right, I need you to do this because this is always fascinating with me, with you. Sometimes you have told me that some artists like literally frighten you, and then you would be fascinated with them. And so is this, because this is
Put
hard.
it this way, if I was when the 91 when this came out, I was only 9 years old. If I was like 14 checking this shit, I'd be like, this guy's the most fucking dangerous dude in the world. Like,
So
God
let me
damn.
slide that over to Alaska. Alaska, since you were in the game a little earlier than us, would you bump into like gangsta and hard cats, and would they still be hard? You know what I'm saying? Like artists that were like hard as hell. And then when you bumped into them, would that be true or not? You
The
know what I'm
hardest
saying?
artist I ever met was Freddie Fox.
I was gonna ask you about Fox.
Oof.
I was dead ass
Yeah.
gonna ask you about Freddie Fox.
And
Sorry,
he was
that was
like the
it.
nicest, funniest dude in the world, right? Like,
Right.
I didn't want to get in a fight with him, but
No.
it's the
Bumpy
last
Knuckles
thing
is
I
a
ever
real
wanted
nickname.
to. But he was just cool as shit. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't bump into any like outright psychopaths, which is what I would have assumed that this person was listening to this record.
Second track, pimp. We're gonna
Yeah.
talk about that.
Oh,
That's
man. Like, yo, because. I guess I'll jump in what I thought. Like, I always thought of Scarface, like, my vision of Scarface was like this wiser than wise sage, right? Like, this dude that just like could drop these beautiful truths on you, but they were cold. They were
Good,
like,
yeah, good
you
word.
know, but then this was like a whole other side of that before there was wisdom to him. You know what I mean? It was just like,
Like he's
it was
grabbing
just the
his dick,
cold.
like
Yeah.
his planet. He is grabbing his balls and like squeezing them for you.
So
You know what
for
I'm saying?
like, Z was saying like the other one, like I think of like NWA, like that's a apt comparison. Like to me, they were funny. There was a sense of humor behind
Agreed. Big
their
agree.
like their darkness. Like
Yes.
they made it more easy to swallow.
That's that Chronic shit. The $1 million pyramid, the little
Yeah,
jokes
all
that they
that
put
shit.
in there
Yeah.
to make the ghetto funny. dead ass. You know what I'm saying?
Even like in the punchlines of like the most like fucked up song, like a bitch is a bitch. Like the punchlines are still funny.
Yeah, they're trying to be funny. Like, yeah.
But like this is like there's none of that. This is just like I would not want to be around this person. It's to put it in language Cam will get. It's like watching Terrifier. Terrifier is like NWA, right? It's like there's a sense of humor about it. Yes. This is what like watching Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like you 100%. Don't want to go back and revisit that. You don't want to, you feel dirty. You feel like you're watching something you shouldn't be watching. Yeah. It's like a snuff film.
That's like whatchamacallit? Serbian film. I happen to watch that. I did watch it. I found it. Somebody said something to that. I said, oh, you know, I go look in dark corners of the internet. Zito never follows me.
Wait, what is Serbian film?
Don't do it.
No, I'm not going to.
Like Faces of Death on VHS?
It's like a worse, still. It's a worse one of the, because the Faces of Death stuff was all about shock, shock, shock. I never saw somebody get hit by a train and explode. Shock, shock, shock. These things, it's like you were watching something you really want to turn away from. But the movie makes you like, no, not yet. Still watch. And it puts you through it. It's one of those. It's like Serbian film pretty much is Tarantino without panning.
Okay.
Okay.
Reservoir Dogs. Reservoir Dogs without panning.
Gotcha. Okay. I wanted to say, I thought about this because Cam was a guest today. And the last guy, I love how you brought up the humor thing. It's like how when you listen to the Lox, right? Sheik is like the energy. Like, I'm here. We're wilding. Jada has the street shit, but like funny punchlines you remember. Style, this is like Styles to me. It's like I'm in the mix, no jokes happening, no clever, nothing. You see me, it's on site. There's nothing there that's a joke. You know what I mean? Versus, but to me, the production gives you that vibe because it has like, again, and there's like De La vibes I was getting from the production too.
There's strict hip hop stuff here. Like strict, like I said, like I don't think it's a stretch. I think KRS-One in 91 could have been on these beats.
You know, with his stuff.
Like, it just sounds like, you know, what you need to build a nice hip-hop portfolio in 1990. You know what I'm saying? Now, help me out. Yeah, I didn't look at the credit. Who did the production? Was it one?
It was actually Scarface Crazy C.
Okay.
Yeah. So again, Scarface is doing a lot of the beats. This is the thing that makes him different to Cube. Like, he's such a, exactly what Castro said. Cube did that, right? He went to a sound that wasn't his sound and
did something
completely different with it, which then a lot of people followed. This obviously is Scarface admiring shit like that and doing it his way. But I do think that him doing the production, and again, My Homies, he does production on there, and it's more of an A&R album, maybe.
Yeah, I remember that.
So he does a lot of production, and I thought that kind of thing might be a bit slept on with Face. If you guys are diving into Face as an artist generally and the monument to Face and like looking through what he's done, you got to kind of talk about, like, yeah, this might be mimicking a lot of other sound, but none of it, like, I would look at this album and think, like you, I'm not skipping two or three tracks. This sound still's good. It still sounds good. And so I think that is a real interesting point about his Face, that he's producing this shit, you know what I mean? I don't really know Crazy C. So.
Did we, we're hearing Ghetto Boys, like, the regional part is important to me because it became so important later with the Rap-A-Lots and all that stuff. So when we heard Ghetto Boys, and last, you can help, you a little older than maybe even Z. Were you thinking Midwest, or you knew it Houston because they said Houston? You get what I'm saying? Like, was there a sound to it? Because mind playing tricks. I'm just talking about, to what Cam's point is, like the sound that the Ghetto Boys was kicking, and then this thing is different. I could see that. But
I didn't think Midwest because there wasn't a Midwest thing happening yet.
Got you.
Midwest didn't happen until like Common was really the first Midwest artist, and he was later than that.
Yeah.
Even his sound wasn't Midwest. His sound was East Coast, right? Yeah. He could have been hanging out with Curious George.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a Midwest sound that was popping.
And what was the Ghetto Boy sound to you?
It was Houston. I always thought it was Houston. Okay. You know, because the songs I heard were the singles, and those were very distinct.
Yes.
Compared to like, it didn't sound like WC in the Mad Circle. It didn't sound like Above the Law or anything like that.
Another thing that obviously fills in the Cube, just if we're doing a bingo, there is that other thing of him going away from the group and doing a solo joint and doing something solo.
Yes.
And that whole thing about like doing a debut album coming from a group, obviously he's trying to find his own feet, and this album might not be it. The Diary definitely is.
Is that the red shirt? Is that the red shirt rookie that me and Z have to deal with our rookies? Is that what that is? If you're in a group and you have some success and then you do the solo, is that akin to, like, we have Chet Holmgren to miss a year, but he still plays and he's a rookie, or Ben Simmons,
right?
Or when the rookie or Blake Griffin, which funny enough, this little side note with sports, nobody talks about Blake missing a year and then the rookie year. I think they were just starving for a star.
Yeah, he was a superstar.
So, like, because Buster was given a lot of latitude because remember, he was floating after LONS. He didn't get right into it. He didn't get right into it. So this is pretty interesting. Their face was like, I'm doing this too. Like, to Cam's point, well, I'm doing this too. Because Ghetto Boys was smash. He didn't need to.
They were huge, yeah.
He didn't need to. You know what I'm saying? But also, I also felt like, and this is something that I'm even going through my own personal, going back through my history right now, I'm writing it solo, is like, we talked about them, the pulling apart. So when Face does this on his own, then he jumps the gun on people trying to pull him, like Pooba and all that, from the group. When they try to do that separate Q-Tip, I remember they was always trying to get Q-Tip by himself and stuff like that. And De La, to their testament and salute the Dove, never, not even a thought.
No.
And even Outkast, I give Outkast held on as long as they could because they started, you know, Zilla used to be an Outkast. He won't admit. He used to be an Outkast. And they just started creatively divergent.
Wait, I used to be. I wouldn't have. What are you talking about? I love Outkast.
You used to be in an Outkast in terms of like you and your former partner.
In and out. Got in an you. Outkast. I thought you were calling me an Outkast or saying I wasn't.
Oh,
an outkast.
The word Outkast. No.
Got you. Okay, good. Yeah, I didn't think about that. The Scarface divergency from Ghetto Boys. That's really interesting to think about. Yeah, I would be curious. So, Cam, what was the last Ghetto Boys album before this?
Last Ghetto Boys. Oh God, last Ghetto. Oh, so hold on. So what did he do here? So the first one they did with Scarface was Grip It, right?
Yes.
That was 89. On the other level. Okay. So that was 89. I'm not sure what was after that. I'm not sure what was
maybe
after
nothing.
Grip It.
But the singles were cracking, right? Mine's Playing Tricks on Me is the Halloween song at that point, at least in 91, 92. Am I jumping the gun? Just pull up some stats for me.
I'm trying to find the discography. Yeah. The
Zoom, so Mine Playing Tricks on Us came out July 9th of 91.
Damn.
It came out late, right? So Mr. Scarface.
This came out October 91.
Yeah, so a late single? So a late single, was we thinking? Or was that?
No, the album came out July of 91. So the single probably came out a little earlier.
Gotcha.
But let's see when the single dropped. No, July 1st, 1991.
So he was doing double duty? He was doing double duty?
Yes.
So Dart Adams, don't get mad at me. This is off of...
Yo, please, Dart, don't, man. This
is calm down, Dart Adams.
Please don't. Yo, it's funny. I saw... Yo, it's funny because even the poke fun at Dart. Souls of Mischief. Was it Souls? Yeah, I think they put up an old poster. And it said like, and it had the actual date on it, and you know, posted on the big letter. We're dropping an album, such and such, you know, 93 to infinity. And I was like, I wonder if Dart would like claim that's not the truth and pull up like Billboard and stuff, even though that's like a promo poster for the group.
Promo poster from the act. Yes.
Never put it past Dart. Never put it past Dart, man.
He got really upset about Special Ed the other day. I was like,
yo,
wow.
he gets tough. Down, like, bro. I will say that Dart digs his feet into the dirt and plants his flag. Like, no, this is not the... But the funny thing is, and to Dart's point, he does do his research. But me and Z, we know that. Remember how many times the release dates would slide around and there would always be different posters and they would change. I remember the Month of the Man. The Month of the Man with Method and Red moved around like three times.
Dog, me going to a record store every week waiting for Tikal 2000 and Inspect a Deck Uncontrolled Substance. It was like a 2-year wait.
And they used to have this chalkboard. They used to have a chalkboard.
Method Man Tikal 2.
It was written in chalk, though. And then they would erase it and move it down. And then you would tell. You would come back in a week, and they would move it around.
I pre-ordered Uncontrolled Substance for Deck, and I kept going back with my little thing every week for fun. Hey, did this come out yet? I already paid for half it. No.
You should keep that.
When the drop?
So to be truly transparent, y'all. So I guess I was getting with these. Like I said, I remember Money in the Pile. I guess these things were all at the same time. I guess it wasn't it. And what I was saying, personally, because I had a former partner who left our group before the group got cracking. And I was in a group called Bohemian Fifth, and then literally, ironically, it was only four of us for most of the time. Seriously, like, he was there for the beginning, and he's on.
It's like the Ben Folds Five.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about that. And he's like, he's on a major single. So we had a big release when we finally put out our record in 2004. We had him perform with us because he's on like the single, but he was definitely solo by that point. Mm. But the funny part to me was we didn't even get cracking. So what are you leaving? So you're not like, this is not the Beatles. We didn't even get started. So how are you leaving? But I digress. I tell him this all the time. It's funny. And it's, Z knows who it is. It's Sugar Tongue Slim. Used to be in a group with him way back in the day.
Out of that, then, for you guys, though, if we're looking at artists who do leave and their debuts that come out of a group, if you just pick, I just wanted to hear what you guys had as your favorites. Obviously, you got Cube and Raekwon, but if we delved a bit deeper, I was wondering if there's any others that you guys had where you were like, guys left a group, his first solo debut album, Jesus, that's amazing. Like, I just wondered if there was any. That
in hindsight, it's Q-Tip a little bit, but in terms of
wait, what first album was amazing?
What, no, Amplify.
That yeah. sucks.
No, Alaska doesn't suck.
Yeah, no, it sucks.
It's really
it
good.
Sucks. It's, nobody was like, oh, Amplified's out.
It,
yeah.
Because it was weird. People weren't
there. No, okay, it wasn't weird. It was
all right.
It sounded like a Gap ad.
Made me forget my other one. I had another one.
Selling Oral-B toothbrush.
Oh, okay, I got one.
The water
the big.
This
is the better one. This is the better one. Well, obviously. Missy Elliott. That's a big one.
Wasn't in a group.
Yes, she was.
No yeah, one knew the group, but no one knew the
yeah.
group.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's a little loophole, but I enjoy where Castro
you're right
was
technically,
going.
But yeah.
All right, then I'll cheat, Lauryn Hill. I'll cheat,
Lauryn. Ooh. Yeah, no, I mean,
everybody wanted Lauryn is the
too,
one.
Yeah,
Lauryn. Yeah. Lauryn is the one. Michael, like they wanted right. Andre do yeah. a solo, and Lauryn yeah. did it solo. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like they wanted her to do a solo, and she did the
that's
solo.
That's a great one. That's a great.
That's actually a good call. You know what I'm saying?
I had Munch. I had Pharaoh.
Pharaoh. Yeah.
Ah, that's a good one. Because I remember nobody kind of look. I love Organized Confusion, so I wasn't calling for Munch to be solo. It kind of threw me a bit because I'm really used to the duo. I'm waiting, where's Poe? And then right. for him not to be on Internal Affairs, that bothered me a little bit. I was like, where's Poe? Like in my mind, I would think because of how I came up on them, I would think okay, Munch does a solo, everybody's pandering for it, but Poe should be on four songs, like that yeah. type of deal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I thought Mantra's solo was disappointing too, compared to like Eternal Organized
Affairs.
Albums.
What the Organized album at the time?
Well, it's very different. Yeah, it's a different genre.
It's a different thing. But Equinox was worse than Eternal Affairs.
Oh, Equinox is terrible. But like,
but
if you compare
I get what you're
Stress
saying. The energy,
or,
yes,
the self-titled.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, yeah. I can go with that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Jada too. Jada carries one, right?
But Jada does
terrible albums, but. People were clamoring
making
for
Illmatic. Oh, that's what Jada is. Jada's yeah. making Illmatic. His albums always need to trim yeah. the fats. Sean needs to take Sean and Midas need to everyone. We know that everyone yep. because there's always a good chunk on a Jada album. There is like, but yep. it's not a good run. It's never like four no. songs in a row. No. It's like spread out on the album. It could be
CD
the first
music.
Joint.
A lot of skips, bro.
Yeah, yeah,
a lot of skips.
But he had. Remember, he was like being pulled by two masters. He's like Jada in a hard, but he still had to make some pop songs. You know what I found yeah. the other day? I found a list of like Mace verses, and he poppy as hell. Like every Mace, man, Mace, like he would just
Brandy,
any joint. Like I just think it was like it was on Instagram, so you know how you do the slides. I was like, damn, he's just smooth. And the
I
only one was kind of hard
Kelly
was
Hansen
on
the Many Mansions,
24 Hours to Live. And when he was saying, "I'll go get my kids out of school," like he was really yeah. he was dropping some science on that one. That's the only one he signed out on 24 Hours to Live, but he was just pimped out. So yeah, just think about that.
that song alone, though, if you've got 24 Hours to Live in your canon. Like you can kind of claim a bit. Of
he didn't slip.
No,
you would think if you looked at it. Okay, who's gonna slip? He didn't slip. He has his verse is really tight. So anyway, back to the grill again.
Yeah.
Speaking of back to the grill again, MC Search.
There you go. MC Search.
Love it.
Did he drop something new?
No,
Search. Oh, I thought you know what I heard. You said Search, and I heard Special Ed because you said it earlier.
Oh yeah, look, no. MC Search dropped his solo record.
Nah, man.
Does
nah,
Pete man. Rock Soul Survivor count?
It's because CL never came with a solo, did he?
Years later.
Yes.
It's called American Me.
Oh, I remember. Was it on like? Oh yeah, I remember that.
It was like early 2000s. After you know, kind of missed the point. And he had like Heat Makers on there, but it just didn't. Oh, it didn't explode. It had like two crazy songs, but that was about it.
Yeah. Pusha T was more the one.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh,
yeah.
I like
that.
That
delivered, actually. That
hell yeah.
Deliver.
My Name Is My Name. Love that shit. All right. So let's take our first break for the listening audience at home.
Hey, everyone. This is Alaska here. Just wanted to let you know about our Patreon page. Patreon for Call Out Culture is a pretty cool place to be. It's patreon.com/Call Out Culture Podcast. What we do there is you get a lot of exclusive material and cool stuff that's not available to the regular listener. We have a few tiers that give you some perks. The $5 tier gives you access to the Call Out Culture Discord page. You get early access to all the episodes. You get exclusive content like our one shots, which is something like that's basically in our crawl and we rant about it for a little bit. We do Bracketology, which is, you know, kind of like a weekly, bi-weekly thing where somebody recommends a topic and we break it into a tournament and figure out what the best version of that topic is. There's monthly watch along where we do like a live stream and watch a movie or a show and video of all the episodes. At the $10 tier, you get everything from the $5 tier. Plus, you get access to our exclusive quarterly demo power hour, which is where we play new music for our fans, works in progress. You get to recommend a bracketology episode, and you get 5% off of Bandcamp drops. The $20 tier, everything from the $5 and $10 tier. Plus, you get shout-outs on the episodes, free downloads of all of our new releases, and 10% off of our Bandcamp drops. So, you know, if you're interested in this and you want to support the podcast, it's a great way to do so. Again, that is patreon.com/calloutculturepodcast. Thanks again for listening. And if you're so inclined, come support us a little more and join a cool community of Call Out cultists. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. So we hope to see you on that side of things. Peace.
Peace, Call Out Culture listeners. You can support each one of us, me, Castro, and Alaska, on all DSPs or directly at the following sites. For Alaska, go to thatrapperalaska.bandcamp.com. For myself, my solo works, and all the associated artists I put out on my label, you can go to $3pistol.com. For Curly Castro, you can go to curlycastro.bandcamp.com or backwoodsstudios.bandcamp.com. And lastly, to support the whole crew, me, Small Professor, Premrock, and Castro, go to wreckingcrew.bandcamp.com. We appreciate your continued patronage and impeccable taste. Thank you.
You know, how do you guys think that this album really fit into its time? Was it something that was groundbreaking? Was it something that just sort of went with the stream? Or how did it fit in its time? Like, what is your impression of that?
Well, like I was saying earlier, there are groundbreaking elements to it, like the use of the Marvin Gaye sample, somebody's subject matter, like this might be one other than Ice-T, like Too Short, like a hard ass song about fucking, like he's talking about knocking her off the bed. He don't care if she fall. He has no concern for her well-being whatsoever. And talk about it after you suck.
A lot of not being able to walk afterward. This happening when he has sex, apparently.
Yeah, he's definitely disabling chicks.
Yeah,
disabling. It really is.
He's talking about sex in very graphic detail.
He definitely is in the "I don't want to hear you talk about sex" club.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, he might be vice president to Nas's president.
No, he's not vice. Yeah. Surely not. No, I don't hate him that much talking about sex.
You don't think he's at the Nas level? You don't think he's at
the cannabis, he's definitely at the Kool G Rap level, like of just like, ew.
Vile.
Like to the point, like I think maybe you haven't had sex the way you're talking about it.
I think cannabis is vice.
But Kool G Rap used to talk about raping chicks all the time.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, Kool G Rap is like, you never knew love.
Like as a punchline.
You never knew.
I'll get it. I'll take it. Like, you damn, boy. Yeah. You never cuddled. You didn't cuddle.
No. Me. You never held hands.
No, so. Yeah. You definitely like.
You need a hug, brother.
Yeah, you never did skin to skin with your parents, did you?
Nah, man. He was all he didn't do skin to skin, but he did meat to meat.
Yo. Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, I feel like he might just be like ramming it into the taint.
He doesn't even care if he's in or not. He's just and rolls over dead sleep. He's one of them guys. And and she takes money out of the wallet. He definitely gets money taken out
of
the wallet.
He's Debo.
Yes.
Yes.
Knocked out. You think he's being a romantic? No, he's trying to get his thing off.
No, who's a low key, I might have said this before, a low key bad sex talker who people I think are surprised by is Q-Tip.
Because
people love Q-Tip's voice, but like, I'm gonna pound the poo-tang until it stinks.
That's
like, come on,
one.
Man.
That's a tough one.
And that's your smooth song.
Q-Tip's voice tricks you that he has a lot of clunky words and lines, but his voice makes you smooth it out. But some of it is pretty clunky. Like if you listen to his rhymes on like Once Again, he's not making any sense.
No.
I listened to it the other day. He's not really talking about anything.
No. I think for this album, it like we said, it's very, very much of the time production wise. And again, it's that era of there's only but about 10, 12 beat makers in the world at that time.
Always bring that up, Z. Right. That's important for people.
Right. It was just a smaller spot to, like, even people talk about like why music, like rock music was so big and influential from the 60s and 70s, because there was only about like 20, 30 bands. That was it. There was no one else out. So I think the production choices, again, like, they're all using like "In Peace to President" break, like all just the classic breaks that people were using at the time. the samples, the guitar licks. The one joint on he samples Pomplamoose on on Mr. Scarface.
Right.
Like that sample was used on like the Jagged Edge shit. You know what I mean? You wanna dance? I'm gonna make you like that. Yes. Yeah, Alcoholics use that on Damn. Yeah. I mean, that's just a classic baseline break. So but they're using it before people. Even a song called Diary of a Madman, like Gravediggers did that 3-4 years later, Diary of a Madman. So I think it was like they were using the best of what they had available to them. So it makes it of that time sonically. I think rhyme-wise, he really separates it. Like he said something before about Ren. He kind of reminds me of an MC Ren.
Yeah.
Where he's just I gotta wear the towel. Listen, this is like the spiritual succession of Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song. I'm gonna tell you why. And the movie, if anybody's unfamiliar, is Melvin Van Peebles. Opus. Yep. And it was one of the first ones that was independent. He did a lot of guerrilla and he snuck it kind of and got it to be played. He lost his sight in his eye editing it. It's the ultimate movie about black man angry, don't give a fuck no more. Like, I'm not going to let the cops or whitey or society beat me down no more, and we're going to put it on film and put it out there, which was not a visual at all. Right. This album is very much angry black man let loose. He's very upset. And I was trying to think of what was going on around there. A lot of racial tension. The riots are about to kick off.
Good call.
There's racial murders. There's police violence. Or up the wazoo around that. 1991 is probably, one to happen. Either Abner Williama or Amadou. I can't remember which. I think that was later.
That was later.
Amadou happened later. But there's Eleanor Bumpers. There's a lot of stuff in 1991.
Yeah.
Yusef Hawkins. So he just sounds upset. Like but specifically angry black men. Shout outs to them, their group. Mm-hmm. They're pretty tight. I like that stuff. But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the cube trope we were talking about. The angry black man that was at that time the most dangerous man in America for the president. The presidents was saying, you know, Hoover later on, Hoover from before, and that trickled down. What are we gonna do about the problem of the angry black man? What are we doing? Eventually he figured out, look, we're gonna incarcerate all of them. But there was an issue about what are we going to do with that energy? It can't be contained.
Right.
We can't just give Sidney Poitier a couple of roles and they're okay with it. They're not okay with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're getting more and more angry. Yes.
All that shit as well.
Yeah. And so as we go through these tracks, Born Killer, Money and the Power, Good Girl Gone Bad, A Minute to Pray, and I'm a dead. Second to Die.
That shit is hard,
you know what I'm saying? So I think, and then Biggie even is the epitome of that. But like, I'm trying to be opulent out of it. Mm-hmm. But that angry black man, I think this is very much that type of album. And it's like
Apex Predator time, remember?
And what are you going to do about it?
Right.
Yeah. Yes. And what are you going to do about it? Like, type shit. Like,
yeah, and the president at that time was the former head of the CIA as well, right? So, like, it does come from that law enforcement background that you talked about with Hoover.
Yep.
But I think on top of that, what you're saying there, I think the stuff that always hit me and why I keep going back to Face, you have that. He's going to rob you as quick as he tells you what the world is. Yeah, he's going to do that. But I think the thing that he does different to Cube that still enriches the experience going back is the portrayal of anxieties. Like, there's this real... I don't even know if this is the album to call kind of sorrowful and sad, because there's sadder albums in songs. But there are songs on this album that I just feel like, fuck, man, I'm just... that. I almost want to give him a hug in a way. It's weird. It's like, it's not making me. It's making me scared of the world because I have no idea what it's like. You know, I'm literally hearing it through this funnel.
Oh yeah, anybody that loses homies and they put it in song, like, I didn't lose no homies at 14, 15. Like, you know what I'm saying? And
oh man, I like suicide. All this shit that he's talking about. 21, man.
The mind playing tricks on me song. If we can give it his props, that's dealing with male mental health.
Yeah.
And we never would talk. We don't talk about that.
I think this album is based on those verses from that song.
He even references them a couple of times.
Yeah. Like, it's like so informed.
The man with the hat and the stick and the cane. He talks about that dude in another song. I think it might be Reasons of Insanity.
And that's like some vision he has of like something he fears either becoming or encountering.
Like, it's his paranoia. Like, in Mind's Playing Tricks on Me, he talks about being followed by
a guy
with a hat and a cane.
Right. Yes.
But do you know that anxieties he has in that song that then come into this? You know, he has this character, which is Scarface, What I love about this is even that has cracks and creaks under the pressure of what he's going through, because mm-hmm. he references himself as Brad.
Yeah.
On a few songs.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
And
yeah.
you're like, holy shit, he can't even keep up the character at points. Like at some point, he's just like, Brad's going to do this. Fuck Scott. I can't even. That sometimes is fascinating to me, to see kind of a mental tug of war.
Great book,
in a album, man, absolutely.
But even like a song, like when you do a song called "I'm Dead,"
yeah, listen that title,
and it's
that's,
only 2 minutes.
That's the
minutes.
Beginning of what Biggie and him did, right?
This is right, the, but this his earlier... yes, so Biggie, yes, that's what I thought. Like "Suicide Thoughts" is very much in debt to "I'm Dead," where "I'm Dead" is almost like the sixth sense, like it's a guy that doesn't realize he's a fucking ghost, and he calls his mom, and she obviously doesn't answer, and then he goes and follows his girl and with his kids, and they go to the gravesite and he sees himself. I was like, bro, this is, again, this is not like the mischievous, wild proof. Like the Eazy-E stuff and Ruthless and NWA, again, I said before, like once they realized that would sell, they were like, okay, we're going all in on this. We're saying fuck, bitch, cock, everything all the time. He was doing it to be like, this is how I talk, and then this is what I'm thinking about. And if it could sell, great, but like these albums weren't setting the world on fire. Like I was looking, like, they're going gold. But it wasn't until later in his career where he would have like a big Billboard debut. I mean, this one peaked at 51 on Billboard. But yeah. It's the beginning of like, you're right, like Biggie and all them, like all worshipped him and loved him. You know, Jay put him on records, Beanie, everybody. And yeah. you can see why. He's the first guy, like your point about, yo, this shit is not fun. Yeah. You know what I mean? It is. Where I live is stressful as hell. The lifestyle I'm in is anxiety. Like Pusha T's made a whole thing about that too. You know what I mean? Like Clips really built their career on that.
Being like vulnerability.
Drug dealers, right? They're like, we're drug dealers. It's awesome, but we're destroying our neighborhood. But people we know are now buying from us, and it's pathetic. You know, it's like he kind of built all that with this.
But do you know when you said that we love our neighborhood? Another thing that I love about his album is he'll say stuff about "I am going to kill you. I'm going to do this." Like in the most stark, "I'm Dead" is one of the starkest songs ever. Just so stark. But then he'll also have this thing about like, "But I know what I'm doing. I can't believe. I hate myself for it.
Yes.
I love." And it all crystal. Is it the Good Girl Gone Bad? Where I'm like, what other song? And it's so callous, cold, and murderous. But it's also like, what the fuck? When he says, "I kill the guy and I take his son," and he takes his fucking son, and you're like,
yes.
And at the end of it, he's like, "Oh, him."
Now he's calling me dad.
Yeah, he's calling me dad. That's more than I can. But
that's
some
like that's going like mythological with the writing, right? Like that's some like. Greek tales of myth, like where I like the Greek man
shit.
I killed, I raised his son,
like Fargo.
Shogun,
you
know,
like the one season,
you know,
of Fargo.
Shogun.
Yes.
Yeah, or some samurai shit.
Yeah.
This is what I mean. So you're telling me Wu aren't hearing this and then also feeling bits of this in what they say. Like I think how Ghost makes me fucking so sad in some of his verses. We've talked about Ghost at length together. And it comes back to fuck, man, Scarface and Geta Boys. I know Geta Boys did their stuff as well, a lot more. But just to show me the ramifications of this shit. As a kid, I'm West Coast. I'm quite like Castro said, I was one of them knuckleheads. If you can make violence sound interesting and fun, if you make it sound fun, I'm going to be more into it.
Oh, hell yeah.
And that's the thing. And then that, with this guy's like, yeah, but check this. You can shoot that guy in the head. But there are ramifications to that. There are something's going to happen when you turn that page. You know what I mean? Yeah. The song might end, but something's going to happen. And I love that about Scarface. He does that better than most, I would say, in his catalogue is... How are you?
To me, he's like one of the great novelists.
Yes.
Over time, the way he writes, like he writes it in this is his medium, but like the way he writes and the things he touches upon are so much deeper than any rappers before him. Like, you know, like Cube is great at storytelling. He's great about talking about what's happening in the streets and even like, you know, getting sort of like the stress of that across, but nobody goes as deep as Scarface did. Like, you know, and there are the songs that are like just hard to listen to where you're like, Mr. Scarface, for example, the opening track. I'm like, this is just the most cold and callous shit ever. Like he doesn't get into any of the like the deeper ramifications of what that life is doing to him or, you know, his mental illness or, you know, anything like that. That starts to unfold as the album goes through, which makes for a great storyteller, right?
Yeah.
Like a great storyteller, somebody that's going to suck you in with the initial thing. Like think about like
the character somewhere, right?
Yeah, like a great movie like, I don't know, fucking like Pulp Fiction or something like that. Like Tarantino's gonna bring you in like on like the heat of the action
mid-story.
And then go back and like give you the whole story of how we got there.
Yep.
Right. Like so I think like he's similar in that vibe where it's like you think you know this person off the bat, but by the end, you're like, this is a whole different person than I thought it was. Yeah. And it slowly unfolds for you. It's not fast. It's not like, it's not a cheap sort of validation of who this person is. It's earned through the whole record.
Yeah, like when he says on Born Killer, this is the second verse, he's like, my mama did her part. It ain't her fault. I was born without a heart. In other words, I'm heartless, Duke. I don't love me. How the fuck I'm gonna love you?
You.
That's right. You guessed it. I'm legally insane, Mark, manic, depressive. I'm taking all kinds of medication to keep me out the mood of premeditating. You know, the longer I'm alone, it's worse. I'm having thoughts of killing me, but I'm killing you first. And my psychiatrist talks, but I don't listen. A victim of society, fucked by the system. No one was talking about a manic, depressive psychiatrist. Like, people would be like, I'm crazy. I don't give a fuck. Like, everyone would say that. And no one's like, I'm taking all types of medication.
But he's lived crazy. If you read the autobiography, he lived that. His life is informing that. He's been in mental institutions. He has tried to commit suicide. Do you know what I mean? Like, his boys, I can't remember who's referenced one of the tracks. Definitely it's named after his boy Gangster Nip, which is who died. You know, this is all, it's all part of this 21-year-old's life. And I know hip-hop at this age is so young, but you're like, gee, to translate that, like you've just said, that verse, that's just him unraveling, bro.
And then the beginning of the third verse, here's the part I was trying to find. He said, now I'm living where I can because I'm homeless. I can't make important calls because I'm phoneless. I ain't eating. I'm starving, Duke. I can't go to mama's house because mama's starving too. No one's holding me down. I got nothing. I have fucking nothing.
In other albums, that would be like, the streets made me crazy. Like, that would be the description. Yes. It wouldn't be the full definition of what that entails and what that means.
Jesus Christ.
Motherfucker writes, man.
And then Marty, when he said, this is the part two, you touched on his cam about saying, or one of you guys said about his name. He said, I'm doing bad, so I'm going bad. And you never expected that from Brad. Mm. Like, now it's like, okay, the Scarface shield has been removed. Yeah. Now I'm talking as Brad. My fucking name is Brad, bro.
That's what I love that. And you talked about Diary of a Madman earlier. I don't want to go too far into, like, yes, we know he's a great writer. But that shit, that is one of the most, I think, one of the best inner monologues I've ever heard on it.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Generally. And I think that feeling of loss, confusion, fucking depression, and those bars, man, I think they're some of the most important Scarface bars on that. When we were talking about our top five Scarface songs, I was saying, and on that verse where it's like, it's going to be a bloody Sunday because you're fucking with it, like Bundy, and I'll be taught not to care like a Vietnam vet with a 1,000-yard stare. I'm like, shit, he's even bringing in Vietnam, like, at this point. Wait, this guy, he don't forget. You know, America has a history.
Yeah, like, I mean, but by 91, like, Vietnam was still fresh, man. We were like, we're seeing the ramifications of the drug abuse, the homelessness. Mm-hmm. We were the children of those people now are the grown-ups. Are like,
and
these
the
kids.
Actual the medical side of the Agent Orange actually kicking in around there, like them having issues later on in their 50s. Because remember, they went to Vietnam in their 20s. This is 20 years later, and they're like, yo, something's wrong. I knew somebody's father actually had the side effects of Agent Orange because he was out there. Yeah. And, you know, so it was pretty fresh.
Platoon, Casualties.
Oh, I was about to say, it's
you know what I mean? It's everywhere. Vietnam was, so maybe that informed his writing. But
that's a good pull, man. Great.
Yeah, but the other one I had from that, I just wanted to show
you. Is he a serviceman? Did Brad go into the army?
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I don't think
21
so.
21 writer. I don't know if he was. He was already rapping so young, wasn't he?
Yeah, so I put you, he would have had it in there. It's interesting when you look up and find some MCs that actually, not just the cannabis.
I think because he was in the psych ward as a teenager, he probably didn't pass clearance, but it doesn't say anything about him. Oh, hold on, public service. No, I mean, he ran for candidates, but nothing about that.
Okay. Sometimes when you hear these people's trauma, sometimes they serve.
Even if
it was just basic deployment,
absolutely.
Sometimes you'll find that some of them serve.
Yo, and the murder. Wait on the murder by reason of insanity. Okay, again, in other hands, that is like a hardcore flatliners thing, right? Or even Gravediggers, like they were really good at making it very cinematic. But when he does that type of shit. When he says, I was born with a chip on my shoulder. Now that I'm older, mom is talking shit, but I told her, mind your fucking business. I love the girl to death, but I don't want to hear it. Save your fucking breath. This, Jeez. Again, that's when you make a song about this, Murder by Reason of Insanity, like talking about, oh yeah, I'm gonna kill people, okay. And then even he talks about, like, I may be scared of Jason, but I'm not scared to die.
Yeah.
That's crazy to say.
This at that time, 91, though, it just hit me now. I'm like, there's alienation, and there's this kind of like, you know, I'm walking the footsteps of danger, and fucking, I can't see because my eyes are closed. All this shit he puts in some of these songs. I was like, 1991, Kurt Cobain. Everyone's talking about Kurt Cobain being the guy, like, oh, alienated youth, and obviously his music good did call. Speak to that.
Yeah.
But I'm like, shit. In hip hop, I'm looking at 1991 albums now, and of course there's the classics. But when you go through them, you're like, Penicillin on Wax and any of this. Do you know what I mean? Like, Ed OG, I don't remember that live. No, maybe that did actually a little bit, but All Sold Out. Pete Rock,
Father to Your Child.
Father. Like, I feel like East Coast stuff was like very luxury.
Good call.
Right, like it was more like, you know.
We just came out of the anti-drug stuff, and like that was just 88, 86, 87. Yeah, you know,
it was very consciousness driven, which a lot of times leads to being luxury.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. It's not talking about how you got to that point in your life. It's talking about, like, y'all motherfuckers need to get to my level.
That's where the West Coast took a hold and slid by, because they were being a little bit more interpersonal with their tales. Like, yo, this is really happening to us. A lot of East Coast stuff is very voyeuristic. Oh, my man's, or I seen this, or like, and it was that. And these cats are rapping. And I remember that was the thing about some West Coast. I was like, oh man, you're the criminal. And you're on the mic. That was something, you know what I'm saying? Like,
So
it was very personal, like tales. Like, the East Coast artists had it, but I remember West Coast really hit hard with like the personal tragic tales we're talking about. Like, some of MC8 shit is real, like, a man's looking out, like, early.
You know, it's the cinema again informs that to me. Yep. Just because that's how I saw it, which was, I suppose Menace was a bit later, but like Boys in the Hood, it is that.
Both, no, the duality, because Menace was in 92. And so Boys in the Hood was like 88, 89.
No, I think Boys was...
Boys was like 90, 91, I think.
Yeah.
90, 91? Am I doing
it? And that gave it a video,
And then Menace was like 92, 93. Yep.
Right.
Because I was still in high school.
Yep. So those go hand in hand to me.
Yeah. And that whole time, yeah. And then so you out in West. So to us, that's the big... we are out West, but you know. But what I mean, like, that's the big flush of... We were getting rushed with this West Coast culture. And some of us, if you didn't go out there, you didn't really know that.
You would never know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've had the East Coast shit for like...
About, you know, 10
years, but like that specific sound for about like 3 to 4 years now.
Yeah.
And it wasn't evolving at that point necessarily, right? It didn't really change until like Wu and Nas came around.
Yeah.
Tribe was starting to change it, Gangstar a little bit, but like it didn't evolve from like that one thing into this next thing. And I think these artists coming in forced artists to do that.
Because there was a lot of facsimile artists doing these formulas. Like I look at old rap cities and you could see like literally 10 to 15 groups. You know what it is? I'm not being cliche, but like everyone had that type of song. And I was like looking at a lot of cats.
Yeah. You even saw it in region, like going back to the Midwest, like Common was just an underground New York City artist. That was his shit. Like on that first record.
Yeah.
He was biting Dos Effects. He was Curious George. Like he was just doing
big
that
time
shit.
Curious George bite. Yeah,
Mad Cap
that.
From Texas, but they were doing like fucking zany East Coast shit. Even like Funk Dubious, which might have been later. I don't know. But that was like East Coasty.
Yep. Yes. Everything was.
But
yeah.
Just to jump on that, I know we talked about A Minute Prayer to Second to Die. I said that was my number one song. And I was just thinking about the way you're talking about like how earlier you were saying his rhyming lifted him above other things. I think at that point, I think he's using voices for ad libs and shit at this point as well. And that was quite a nice, that I'd never really heard anyone do that as much as he did. But I thought it was the detail. And we talked about details in Ghost's work before. And those are amazing. But A Minute to Pray, and I talked about this on our show, where I was like, the fucking detail and of this guy he's fighting with broke his ankle. And I'm like, you've probably seen that because there's no way you're writing that. You're probably writing arm, you know, neck, back, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy broke his ankle. And I was like, that's such a weird thing to put into it. And then I did some research on his, like, you know, he's talking about certain songs. He was talking about that song. And he's like, I really actually have to give a lot of credit to my English teachers. He was talking about his English teachers and saying, like, I credit my writing ability to those, my fourth grade teacher, her name is Miss Smith. I've got it written down here. And he's like, and they told me how to write lyrics, stories, and journalist type pieces.
Damn.
That's a really interesting upbringing to have that. Then obviously have the life he lived, how it all kind of coalesced into this solo album. It's pretty mad.
Well, you could tell, like, and this is just a minor detail, but I thought about it when I was listening to it, that he's been writing his whole life because he's like, give me my diary.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I know the song's like Diary of a Madman, but it's like, give me my diary. Like, an MC would be like, give me my rhyme
lexicon.
Book.
Yeah, diaries. Right? Like, yep.
If you're diarying, if you're somebody that diaries, you...
Journals.
You've been writing your whole life, man. Right? Like,
that's interesting. Yeah.
So... That always stood out. Not always. I mean, as of this morning, it stood out to me because I never heard this album before then. But yeah, I don't know. He's a fucking a writer, man.
I think what's dope about it is he the way he approaches things. He might be, because again, people back then really embellished. I'm sure some of the stuff is embellished too to make it sound really intriguing. But he. I could see where DMX got a lot of his shit from too, with Face, where Face is equal parts maybe embellishing for the story, but then equal parts like processing heinous, horrible shit he's seen by putting it into these songs and making the songs really edgy. But then to our point, we're saying like he also will have those songs later on where it's kind of like, I mean, that's just how it was. I mean, I didn't want it to be this way, but that's just what it was. Whereas like DMX would channel that either being like hyper and crazy or like the prayer crying, you know, right? Like trying to find like, what is the point of going through a life like this? What, why do I have to live this way? And so, yeah, like DMX's way was to bark and go intense and or break down and crying in front of 50,000 people. Whereas Face is just like operated in a pace of like, well, Castro, it's kind of like Woods. It's like, well, you know how it is.
Yep.
I mean, this is where it is. I mean, so I'm going to just talk about it, you know, but I think him doing it at the time, I keep going back to the Eazy-E like Cube way where I feel like they heightened instances. And again, there's probably truth sprinkled in there for sure. But with Scarface, I can't tell what is made up for a song and what this guy really saw and lived through. And at Alaska's point, actually journaled and then was like, oh, it's time to make an album. Oh, I remember this thing from 4 years ago. When a guy got killed in the middle of the street and now his kid's a, you know, a junkie or whatever. It's like, it's really terrifying to think of. And I really want to read his book now to see what transpired by the time you said, Cam, he was 21.
Yeah.
That's not a good life. That's.
Yeah. I had one question I wanted to ask you guys generally. It was on that Marvin Gaye sample and I still love it. But I was thinking it's one of the best examples of how the sample can enhance the potency of the lyrics in a way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I know most samples should do that, but I think these are really work really nicely, amazingly well together. It's not like preachy, it's like wisdom, like you said earlier, and it's a bit like that. I wonder if you guys had any like ideas about, yeah, when that sample hit the lyrics and it just hit different. I can't think of any others off the top of my head at the moment, but yeah, no, I just wanted to point out that For a Minute to Pray does that really well.
You know, when I think of it's more of like a recent song, it was that that Royce da 5'9" song with Premier called Shake This, where he samples David Axelrod, and it's all about like Royce, like him going, he's about to go to jail, like all these tribulations he was going through like in the 2010s. And when you touch a David Axelrod sample, you know, which has been used to death, it's like very, very cinematic. Alaska, what's his name? Gang used it on what was the album with Imani that we did liner notes during COVID?
Unknown Infinites.
Yes, Unknown Infinites. So like that sample. Anytime you use the David Axelrod stuff, which is incredible, but it gives you that feeling of like, ooh, this is really personal. And so when he pulled the Marvin Gaye, like I wasn't anticipating this when I heard it, where I was like, holy shit, here's Marvin Gaye. And I'm looking at the notes from Genius about A Minute to Pray, Second to Die, and it said, There's an interview from him in 2013, Scarface, saying the title was brought to him by one of his guys. He said the idea of the song was to write a movie and to tell a story, and that song gave me my title as one of the greatest storytellers ever, and that's one of my best fucking songs, quote. You know what I mean? So he knew it when he did it. It was going to be there. You know, and they also take Bill Withers, the drums that have been used to death, Kiss of My Love. But yeah, using What's Going On and then Inner City Blues Make Me Want to Holler. I mean, it's like, that's an expensive record to make, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, probably not at that time, though. They probably just
I would hope.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, course, and then cleared it later.
Yeah, of course. Because his family is litigious. So they definitely would have came after him at some point if they didn't clear that.
Yeah, of course. Did he play any songs off this in his Tiny Desk concert?
I don't think so. I don't think he did.
Yeah, this is not NPR approved.
No. He did a lot from Untouchable.
Right.
He did Mary Jane. He did
Madman. I thought he might have done Diary of a Madman.
Did he? I don't remember.
But I did love that concert, by the way. I thought that was
that's what, you know, sparked this whole series we're doing was watching him, you know, take those songs in that environment. And the cool part too, I think, which we'll get to in future albums, is like, to your point, Cam, like the more Faith started producing and becoming a musician, mm-hmm. like how that changed his patterns and how it changed his ear and the records. Where I think with this one, we said maybe beginning, it was like, here's 1991 beats, I have verses, let's go, you know, and yeah. I got 12 songs. That's it. That's all we're going to do. Get it going. So I love it.
Z, I feel like this is kind of off a little bit, but the text that we were having with Jesse and Alex yesterday about Johnny Cash.
Yes.
About wanting, like, waiting for like rappers to get old and have that wisdom and that voice.
Mm-hmm.
Feel like he's like one of those dudes that's like really close to that.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
He's still super talented, still writing. He's loves what he's doing. Yeah. Like, he's not broken by it, which someone like Ghost seems broken by it.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah.
I think Face already had that. And, you know what I mean? Like, he started off on that path
without even knowing. He did,
yeah.
But so did like somebody like Johnny Cash, I think. Like, he was like writing stuff like that as a younger man. Like, he wasn't just making typical shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, and last thing I wanted to say about this record when I thought about it was the way he would do the, like, the afterlife. He would always have that in his albums, right? Talk about God, Bible, books, church, all those. And so, like, when Prodigy was doing that, like getting closer to God in a tight situation, or even like, you know, I sitting in my four corner room staring at candles, high on drugs, like him flipping that shit. Like, Prodigy's another one to me where it's like Scarface laid the blueprint and be like, okay, you can be, you know, scared of the afterlife, scared of people on your block, or like, I'm taking it to those people because I don't fear the afterlife, or I'll just deal with it then if someone gets me sick. It's like a very nihilistic way.
Gave it to Pac. That's Pac.
Pac, there you go. Thank you.
That whole idea of during death and after, like Z is saying, you know.
I find that a really interesting relationship, him and Pac, in the 90s. Like, how they seem to really work. I mean, I think they work well together, but they also seem to be so cut from the same cloth in a way. Especially as they got older, and I think that's one of the reasons. Actually, Pat was probably one of the biggest gateways to Face for me, actually, outside of Getter Boys.
That Smile song is still crazy. It really is a crazy and impressive song. But yeah, that's interesting, you know. And Z brought that out. Yeah, there's a parallel going on between Face and Pac.
Yeah. So Cam, I feel like we're coming up close to your out time.
Oh, I know, man. I'm so sorry. I have a kid's birthday party.
I know. I don't want to keep you from that.
Why would you be a dad? Do you know what I mean? I'd rather talk about Face.
So let's wrap this up. Like, two quick questions. We'll rapid fire around it. Cam, do you think this album holds up? And what is your favorite track on the album?
I think we all know Minute to Pray is probably my favorite track. But underrated, if we're going underrated, Born Killer or Body Snatchers. I do like Body Snatchers. I don't know, old school, but I kind of like Body Snatchers. So yeah, I would say that's for the reasons I've given. Does it hold up? Is it? Yeah, I suppose it does for me because I'm consciously trying to get more into Scarface. Does it hold up if you're trying to go back to... It's so swamped, 1991. Like, why would you go visit this unless you are consciously looking to go to Face? Apart from the singles, I suppose there's videos. So on YouTube, that video will pop up. A Minute to Pray will pop up a few times. Money and the Power does pop up a few times. So does it hold up? The singles hold up. Absolutely. As an album, I still love it. I still think it's one of my favorites. So just on that bias, I think it definitely does hold up. And I would, if you do a double listen to this, listen to America's Most Wanted. That's your double feature for the night. Like, those two still work so well together for me.
Yeah, that's a great call. Z, what do you think?
I'm curious to hear more of the catalog so I can figure out where it stacks up. I think it holds up in a sense of like the Scarface artistry. I think again the production is what it is. It is just very 1991, for better or worse. So if that's your thing, you're gonna love it. If you're not into that, you're not gonna like it. I really love Mr. Scarface. Like that's such a great album opener. And like the Tony Montana clips in the background, like he does that style too, where he's taking a lot of sound clips. He has a lot of sound effects. Like there'd be random times I was driving, all of a sudden like gunshots go off. I'm like, oh shit! Like it sounds.
Oh shit! Isn't that a female shooter?
So loud.
As well?
Yeah,
it's a female shooter, I think. And I'm like, that's a nice thing. I forgot in 1991, girls are going on like that. They are like shooting up places and they just helping.
You know it.
Amazing.
Letting it fly.
Line your ass up.
Yeah, so I like Scarface and then Murder by Reason of Insanity. Like those are the two I'll go back to all the time from this record. But yeah, nice. Everything from but he is an albums artist to me. It's hard to just parse his stuff. You really want to go through the experience and like hear all of his thoughts at that stage in his life. So yeah, I would definitely recommend it.
Castro.
I think it's definitely a snapshot to 91. And I think it's refreshing in the sense that if you want to really get into your Scarface bag. There's some other albums you could skip, but I think this one is a little bit important as far as like the DNA of Face. But I think it's definitely it's kind of like encased in amber, because like I said, it is like the prototypical Voltron rap song. Like this is the arm, this is the leg, this is the head, you know what I mean? And my joint is the pimp, the audacity of the song. It's just, I'm not glorifying what he's talking about. I mean, he's fucking the shit out of these girls, but like, but it's just the audacity in the language. And that was always, that's when we brought up NWA, like the fact that they were willing to use language that would get them excluded from certain mediums. It would like put, you know, as much as like, I don't like to give Luke too much credit because he was just, you know, a pervert, but you know, he went to court for it, but like the spaces they were willing to go, that was adventurous to me. Because you definitely were sacrificing, you know, especially around then, you're sacrificing part of your audience. You're sacrificing your ability to be on television and radio in some areas and stuff like that. But no, this is my truth. And when artists started leaning into their truth, what we call, I don't, you know, gangsta rap or whatever, but I liked when they said it's not gangsta rap, it's reality rap. I like that because I knew cats that were going through that stuff. I had a neighborhood that was a certain way. And them being able to tell their truth, regardless of, hey, you know, this can't cross over. Fuck it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like, I'm still rapping over these beats, this type of shit. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and it helped the marketing. It helped the marketing to piss off Republicans, family values, senators, school boards. Like this out, when I was listening, I was like, this is like Dan Quayle's nightmare, because he was always talking that family value shit at this
was
time.
The counterculture that was, you know, started in the 70s stuff. This, it was, rap was the counterculture. It was like going against how they wanted everybody to, you know, wear sweater vests and a button up shirt and maybe go to a trade school. You know what I'm saying? Like they were trying to autonomize us. They were trying to Stepford Wives us. That's what everybody wanted. You know what I'm saying? Stepford Wives your kids and, you know, run them out with the dead eyes and the same haircuts. And this rap was like, nah, that's not how I grew up, homie. You know, like, oh, turn that down. No, nope, nope. Play it loud. You know what I'm saying? This stuff was being played loud. And I remember like the audacity of certain musics, like there would a guy driving by, he'd be bumping this and he wouldn't care that there's an old person to live across. I don't care. I'm linked and I'm feeling good about it too. And so I'm reinforcing what Face is putting out there by putting these artists were putting themselves out on the limb. This wasn't like you said, this went gold. So there's no success here. There's no record execs beating you. Hey, what's the next one, guy?
I mean, they were independent going gold. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like that's not like.
But like we said, it peaked at 51, like right in the middle of Billboard. That's it.
But okay, so this album totally earns that explicit parental advice.
Oh yeah, I think one thing that this like era of music taught us, and it's like it's not even just this genre, like heavy metal, like satanic shit. If you can make pearl clutchers clutch their pearls and complain about shit, that's the cheapest and most effective form of marketing.
Their kids are buying every
and
last kid.
It goes
in
on till this day. Like you look at those YouTube channels that we make fun of, like the alpha male ones, or like the Joe Rogan types. The people losing their minds about that shit is why that shit's popular. Oh, it has nothing to do with the content of it.
No. Exactly.
Because when the fad dries up, we don't even talk about it no more, and it goes away. And these things that don't go away, we haven't stopped talking about. Mm-hmm. We haven't stopped putting up Joe Rogan. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I just know him from Fear Factor, like, straight up. Like, that's what I really know. But like, when Z put me on the Joe Rogan these years later, I was just like, but Fear Factor. Like, I used to watch Fear Factor religiously. The guy had the little. Now it makes me think: was that a unit? Was that his hair? Was that a unit? Did he just lose his hair?
I think that was a unit.
Was a unit? Z, you think that was a unit?
I remember from news radio.
I remember
taking even further back.
I remember he was on a show on Fox about minor league baseball players that only lasted one season.
Had a unit. That had to be a unit.
I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah.
Oh wow. He never got
Kurt
into
Angle
the
got the bald head and made it cool for white people that have bald heads.
Due to knowledge. Was it Kurt Angle?
Bruce Willis.
Yeah, right. Good call, yeah. Bruce.
No, but wait. Bruce was late. Bruce, that was Die Hard 2
Bruce
and
still,
3,
Bruce didn't
one.
Go fully bald, though, for
yeah,
a long
so,
time.
Yeah, so, like, who's the real original?
Had the horseshoe.
He was in the ballpark.
Yo, was it whatchamacallit, though? Oh, man, I forgot.
Kurt Angle was the one that made it cool for dudes whose heads look like thumbs.
Yeah, the misshapen head goes to Kurt Angle. But Natural Born Killers might be.
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah. Natural Born Killers.
Yeah.
That was like the
because he cut his hair in the movie. And then he just went and he kept
looking way better.
It wasn't just for Nazis anymore.
Skinheads with the lightning bolts on the side of their head.
Yeah.
But remember, y'all told me that was punk at first, right? It was like a punk thing at first.
Skinhead was punk. And it was like oi as well. Like
Skins,
yeah.
Okay, over there. That's what
fascinating. Because it's the white kids mixing with the black kids, making their own culture. And then the right wing coming in and totally adopting it. So you'd have skins fighting skins that some skins didn't bother doing skins. They still called themselves skinheads, but just did like a one. So it was like they had sideburns and a one. And you're like, holy shit, but you're a skinhead? He's like, yeah, and I hate racists. But there's other skinheads saying,
but it's still the uniform or the boots and like that.
Because that was co-opted by the racist. So it's like Buddhists being like, I'm not giving up my swastika.
Right. And who should? Like the Nazis did reappropriate it. And that thing, that's a biblical symbol.
This week that there's a town in upstate New York called Swastika, New York.
Wow.
And they refuse to change it.
And of course there is. Of course.
Because it's named after like the Native American tribe. That's what they call the area.
Yeah, it's almost a religious sigil. Like
it is.
It means peace. Yeah. It literally means peace.
Well, Castro, did you give your favorite songs and?
Oh, the pimp. The audacity of the song.
And it stands up for you, or do you think? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a snap. It's encased in amber. It's a 90-91 record, like to the nail. So I think it's important if you want to get into some of the DNA of Face and see where some of this stuff might have come from. And then like we're discovering through this discussion how many artists he directly influenced that must have been banging this shit out when they were writing that shit. We could see that to Kyle, even the Biggie and all that. So I think this is important to learn about the hip hop family tree. This is an important one.
I would just say about Pimp, it should not be track two. It throws everything off.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. It's hard. But no, but Z, I think it is because it's like, you didn't know, but this is what you know what this reminds me of? Did you see when the newest thing with Rick James came out from in the back and to the girl in the back that, he said to the girl in the back, I don't care who you thought it was. I don't care who you thought I was. And he said, I'm coming out here to let it be known. He wasn't supposed to talk. He said, I'm coming out here to let it be known. I don't care who you thought I was. I'm Rick James, bitch. Like, I don't care what you thought this record was going to be. This is what it is. Like, so the shock value of track, you know, I'm putting them track twos coming. It's punching you in the mouth. Like, this is going to be some serious hard. Like, I just, you know, pause and all that. But this is a hard record, like encased, like cement over. You know what I'm saying? And so the reason it probably is track two is like, yo, we're going to punch them in the mouth. There's no ifs, ands about it. We ain't gonna gently lead you into the night. We putting you right there in the deep part of the water and just holding you down there.
Yeah, my favorite track is probably Murder by Reason of Insanity. I really love that fucking sample. I think it's Syl Johnson, Different Strokes. It was also used in We're All in the Same Gang. I think Public Enemy used it. Yeah, Wu-Tang on Shame on a...
Yep.
Yeah, Magic Number. It's been in so much stuff. I love that. I love that sample. And the song's amazing. Like the writing on it's amazing.
Yo ass got took. That one's funny.
So that, and I guess, I don't know. I think it stands up as a model for like what was popping at that time. I don't know if it stands up to be like, oh, you like rap? Check this out. You know what I mean? Like, I think if you're like from a museum piece, it stands
up. That's what I'm saying. If you want to know what 91 rap was, press play here. In fact, even only have it on digital, put this tape in. Like, you need to hand this out to somebody as a tape.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, you should be listening to this in a car where the carburetor might close if you stop at a red light.
Can't idle. Them cars would be turning off and scaring the shit
out
of me.
Yeah, like,
car,
shit out of, yeah.
Why is the car shutting off? Yo, that's the hour? I can understand that shit. That shit's scary.
All right, gentlemen, I think we did it. Cam, you got anything you want to promote?
As you can tell, I'm ready for this question. I can't remember. Yeah, I suppose we were on a bit of a break because my editor just went on holiday and just is away for like 3 weeks. So we've had a bit of a hiatus on this feed, so we apologize for that. But we have got like top five Scarface coming up. So we've got some of the Dead End Hip Hop guys on for that. And Def C. Actually, you should definitely tap up Def C if you haven't already for this series, because his Scarface knowledge
is
deep.
What is he doing next? Because he already did one song for y'all with the song breakdown, right? He did.
Yeah, he did a song breakdown for Woods, but this one's top five Scarface. So it's a few of the Dead End guys. He's on there with us. And then back in 2022, we recorded all these, I'm sure you guys have contributed to some of them, top three, like best three album runs in hip hop. And
we were on one of those. Did we?
Yeah. So okay. 2022, we like did all this kind of recording over the last year and a half. It's just gone absolutely bananas, and we haven't managed to actually get them out. So I finally just got things in order. They're coming. So we've got Rock Marciano's top three album, like three album run, which is Marsburg, Reloaded, and Marcy Baku. So we're doing those. I know. I know that, but this is why it gets interesting. We're good with Cinema Sci for that, so that's quite good. And what else we got? We've got Cypress Hill three album run, Kendrick Lamar three album run, nice. And Armand Hammer three album run. So yeah, we've got all these coming up. So yeah, tap to the free crate808.com, and just man. And you guys are always on there, man. So I love what you guys do, and you know I'm a fan. So yeah,
man.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for letting me come on. Definitely.
Hell yeah. Yes.
Appreciate you, man.
And can you share your Scarface playlist that you were talking about with us?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you want it, like I said, there's a big
It's a Spotify bias. Playlist.
It is a Spotify playlist. Yeah.
If we drop it in the chat right now,
let's put it in the chat.
Alaska will grab it and put it.
Can we share it with the listeners or no?
We'll put it in the description.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We'll post it in the description.
Yeah, man. Definitely. This is just my personal.
That'd be a good primer for people to get down with this, with the Scarface.
There's a bit of The World Is Yours on there, The Untouchable, like I said. I can't wait till you do My Homies, because that I'm really.
How many have we done so far now? Is this the third?
This is two. This is the second one.
Two? Okay.
Yeah, it's only the second one.
Yeah, not enough coverage on that album. So yeah, I'm enjoying the series you've done, definitely.
See, we brought up somebody else we thought we should do. Weren't we talking? Who was that?
For Boom Bap Anthology?
We was talking about somebody's back end of their catalog would be good to look at.
Remember we were talking about that. I was telling Cam that it's going to be a series, but I can't remember who we were talking about.
Oh, you just said it, though.
It'll come to me.
Yeah. Castro, you got anything you want to promote?
It's almost shrapnel season. It's almost shrapnel season. We'll be going on tour soon in June. And we have a release party in New York on the 20th, I think it is. And we have a Philly show on the 19th. So, I'll just keep telling the dates at the end of every episode. But I won't, you'll start seeing, flyers up right now. You'll start seeing it being proliferated more. But so I'm on shrapnel season. So I'm just kind of wrapped up in the final touches of that before we launch. And to anybody that hasn't, Cavalier has dropped an excellent album. We're going to try to have him on the pod soon to talk about it, because it's a transcendent project. It's called Different Type Time.
Yep.
We want everybody to plug into that. So I'm back with Studios. And that's all I got.
All right. Bet. And then I got Money Has No Owners, me and Chong Wizard. So I think the CDs or tapes, one of them are sold out. We still have skate decks. There's some vinyl, a few test presses left. And we have the hoodies and shirts. And Chong's going to have a new design coming out for the shirts soon. And then I'm gearing up to put out Marcus Penn's album, Night Music, on Friday, March or May 3rd for Bandcamp Day. We're going to have these crazy tapes that look like VHS cassettes. So it's going to be awesome. So people are pre-ordering it now. Cool, the digital, but we'll put the tape orders up on Bandcamp Day when it drops. That's it.
All right. And I don't have anything I'm ready to start promoting yet, but soon.
He got stuff in the tuck, y'all. You know how weird he is. Again, Shrapnel will be on tour in June with Feakin' Lungs and some other ne'er-do-wells. Jesse the Tree will be with us. And also at the release party, I'm sorry, I forgot to put this. There will also be a special beat set between August Fanon and Child Actor.
Next.
Look at that.
You don't want to miss that. And Controller 7 will be making a live in-person appearance.
At which one?
At the New York show.
Oh,
showing up to perform with us. Dose One will be there for that one.
Oh, Alaska, word?
Alaska's going to be there. Mestizo's going to be there.
I'll definitely be there.
Cats is making trips, yo. Cats are making trips. Yeah.
Very nice.
So, yeah. See, I want to catch Dose on the East Coast. He's working on some stuff. Just a little secret there. So, cool. He'll be on this side. And so, he said he's going to swoop by.
Nice. Swoop in.
We just had him on the pod. So, if anybody missed that excellent episode, Overdose. Conversation with Dose One. Please go check that one out. We got some really good, excellent episodes. I'll be doing more promo about
Ball
it.
Ball Out Culture.
Ball Out Culture. We just dropped our first episode. We'll be dropping another episode. Probably do that in a week or two.
Yeah.
Wrestling Pod. What is it called? What are we calling it?
Call Out Culture Wrestling. Very creative name.
I thought y'all could have been better, I'll be honest.
Gotta have a little more switch zip. Or something. Body slam or something. There's nothing.
I mean, I left it to Griff. Griff's not one for words.
I thought y'all did one, though. Y'all really didn't come up. Y'all really didn't come up with anything? I'm not.
No, it was just Call Out Culture.
The logo. You know what it is?
Oh, the logo. He did the logo, yeah.
The little man with the mask. The luchador. Okay, excuse me.
The figure four leg lock. The figure four leg lock.
Yeah. Shouts to everybody in their soft guy era. We sponsor that.
Yeah, soft guy era.
Appreciate it.
Alaska. I just realized we're doing an alien chat.
We are doing aliens, yeah.
We should pimp that as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, actually, it'll probably be by the time this airs, it'll be getting ready.
You should do a series on our thing. It'll just be called Call Out Culture Movies.
Movies.
we know
hey, I've always said
to But then we'll probably have to start with a couple of episodes with Marcus Penn. We don't want to just snatch everybody's, you know.
We'll just do our own. Just call it Culture Movies. That'll be the name of it.
It's not going to be the name of it.
I know.
And they invite Cabbages on there.
Yeah,
for real.
Yeah.
100%. So, all right, gentlemen. I'm going to stop the recording here.
Cool.